Cecil Womack's father was a gospel singer. His brothers, including Bobby Womack, who has since become a successful soul singer, sang gospel together when they were kids. Then under the name The Valentinos, they performed rock and roll. The recording of their original song, It's All Over Now, was covered by the Rolling Stones. Cecil Womack has since been a session guitarist and record producer, as well as songwriter. Cecil and Linda Womack first met when they were teenagers, when Cecil and his brothers recorded for Sam Cooke's record label. The Womacks now divide their time between Somerdale, New Jersey, and Los Angeles. Their new album, Love Wars, was on several 10 best lists in the Village Voice's 1983 annual Music Critics Poll. This is the title song from Love Wars.
But it's taking me under. Since you're not here, oh, I feel so all alone. It's bitter when it's hard to get, but this hide and go seek, it's making me weak. Oh, I'm weak all over now. I promise to stop boxing you round, so don't scratch my face. In the running, oh, the fight is all over now.
We need to get our act together, take it on the street, bring it on home,
and drop them guns on the floor. Flashbacks and uncovered tracks from when you left with my best friend.
We need to get our act together, take it off the street, bring it on home, and drop them guns on the floor. Make love and peace in the name of never cheat. Father, be strong.
Oh,
It's Linda and Cecil Womack, now recording under the name of Womack and Womack, the title song from their new album, Love Wars, and the Womacks are my guests now. Welcome to Fresh Air. It's a really great pleasure to have you here.
It's good to
be here, I'm telling you.
Why, after writing songs, hit songs, for other people for so many years, have you decided to put this album out together where you're both recording your own songs?
Well, I think it's in a span of time for doing one thing for so long, creatively, you have to move on to something else, you know, to keep your juices flowing.
Do you think that you interpret your songs really differently than other people do?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Much more so.
I should mention that their two-year-old daughter, Micah, is in the studio with us. Does it ever happen that someone asks you to record a song whose music you don't really like very much?
Oh, yes. We got quite a few calls like that, you know.
Well, what do you do when that happens?
Well, we got some younger nephews and a couple of sons that that's in the kind of music, you know. So we just turn the projects over to them. Maybe they can come up with a song, you know.
Linda, what have been the biggest hits that you've co-written for other performers?
Oh, boy. Well, we have TKO. You're going to play that later. I'm in Love, which Aretha Franklin did, as well as Wilson Pickett. Woman's Gotta Have It, we did. I Can't Live Without Your Love, Teddy Pendergrass did also. I can't think of any others, can you guys?
No, you're doing pretty good.
I'm doing pretty good. Huh? Oh, boy. We had, let's see, the OJs did a tune, I just Want to Satisfy You. I was trying to get the title right. A couple of years ago, that did real well. Yeah.
Why don't we listen to TKO, which Teddy Pendergrass did, and that was a big hit. Then we'll hear the recording that you've both done on your new album, Love Wars. Tell us first a little bit about how you wrote the song.
TKO?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one.
Oh, TKO. Well, TKO was a true-to-life experience, you know. We were, bringing our relationship close together, you know. And we kind of wrote that song. Well, she was in Los Angeles and I was in Philadelphia, so we kind of wrote that song over the telephone, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
that one speaks for itself.
Yeah, it was a very, very real moving experience that we had.
Right, we had to bring it on home and drop them guns on the floor.
Yeah, so that song is real warm in our hearts. It brings back a lot of memories, you know, of coming together. That's what our album is basically about. And what you asked me earlier about our interpretation of things, which is very personal to us, how we feel about life. And it's all in the way we particularly will project a song different than another artist.
Let's listen to a couple of minutes of the Teddy Pendergrass recording, and then we'll hear your version of your own song, Love Wars, from the new Womack and Womack album.
Okay.
Okay.
I shed her some tears. I told myself time again, this time I'm gonna win. But another fight, things ain't right, I'm losing again. It takes a fool to lose twice and start all over again. I think I better let it go, 'cause it looks like another love TKO. Oh yeah, I think I better let her go. Oh yeah, 'cause it looks like another love TKO. Oh yeah, I tried to take control of love, she took control of me. See, you lose all thought since the time you have a change of mind. Taking the bumps and the bruises and all the things of a two-time loser. See, I tried to hold on, my faith is gone. It's just another sad song. So I think I better let her go. Let her go.
Let her go, baby.
'Cause it looks like a I think I better let her go.
Let her go, baby.
'Cause it looks like another love TKO. Another sad song. I think I better let her go. 'Cause it looks like another love TKO. Oh yeah. I think I better let her go.
Let her go,
let her go,
baby.
'Cause it looks like another love TKO.
That was TKO, written by my guests Linda and Cecil Womack, and the recording that we just heard is from their new album together, which is called Love Wars, and we opened that set with Teddy Pendergrass's recording of that same song that they wrote. And the Womacks divide their time now between Summerdale, New Jersey, and Los Angeles. Are you enjoying performing now, having, for the last few years, been mostly behind the scenes? Is it fun to be on stage?
Yeah, it is.
You're having a ball.
It is, because it's a personal expression of things that we love, songs that we love to sing. And it's a good feeling, and Cecil and I work good together.
Do you find that songs go in and out of fashion, or song styles or vocal styles? And if so, where are we now?
Well, I think music trends go in and out, you know. They change every 3 or 4 months. But I think a good song never dies.
Do you write do you try to, like, monitor the trends, or are you going to write your songs no matter what seems to be the commercial?
Oh, yeah. Stay away from the trends, you know, because, I mean, you know, we listen to the radio, listen to some of the stuff, you know. If you see anything in there that you can expound on, you know, you can use it, but we keep a basic original ideas, you know.
Yeah, that's what being creative to us is all about. You know, I think there's room for it's free for everyone to express themselves how they feel. And we hate the idea of herding off into one direction because that's supposedly the going thing, you know. It's nice to incorporate things you like about different records you hear. They may be hits and they may not be, but we like to keep our own thing going. Yeah.
You're each from musical families, so I'd like to speak with each of you about your past. Linda, your father was Sam Cooke, who was one of the most popular performers in the 60s. Did his fame make you want to be famous or avoid the spotlight?
I think, you know, the part about it that that lit the fire in my heart to do this was the creative part, the music and the writing and the expression of hearing what you do or doing it by singing or playing something, not necessarily the fame, because if anything, I think that made me quite leery as to when and how I would do this, because that can be so detrimental to your personal life, you know, if it's not handled right, you know.
What did you see that made you leery about fame?
Well, you know, it's how people look at you. You know, you're unreal to most persons when you're famous. They look at you as a hit record or somebody untouchable when you have the very same feelings and problems and everyday, you know, lifestyles as most people do. You know, you might have some success and make money, but that doesn't change you as a person. And many times people that you deal with, well, the world in general, when you become worldwide famous, don't really deal with you like that. It's more like you're a thing than a person. And like I said, unless your personal life is very intact, that can be agonizing.
Did you listen to your father's music when you were young?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did. You know, I listened to it in a different sort of way, though. It wasn't like, it wasn't even like I listened to other people's music. I listened to his music, I think, from a more critical standpoint. Because he would play records and say, "Now, Lynn, can you dance off of this? And can you understand it?" You know, I was young, but I appreciated music at a real young age. So I had a more mature, I guess, attitude about it. And he would ask me things, you know, "Well, is this, how does this feel to you?" You know, and things like that. So it was from that standpoint that I would listen more.
Well, by the time you were 14, you wrote a hit record that became a gold record, one for Wilson Pickett.
Yeah.
Had you been writing songs even before that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I started real young when I was young. Cecil always teases me because everything I did it secretively because I wanted it to be good. You know, it's like if you, being involved with a family that's famous, you know, my father, anything that I would do would be on Front Street, in other words, you know, before I could get it practiced. So I was very careful that I did my thing away so I could get it together when I presented it. And people look and say, "Oh, that's so-and-so or whatever, doing that." I wanted it to be good. And I wanted it to be something that I could be proud of for myself, not, you know, just because you're so-and-so's daughter, you're doing something. I never thought of it like that. So I practiced young.
How do you polish a song?
Oh boy, you get an idea, and it's like a thought. You sketch, you know, some ideas about a thought, whatever thought that might be. And then once you get a flow as to really what you want to say about a particular subject or feeling, then you separate it into your verses and your chorus. You get a punchline or something that you think will stick in people's minds. And then you just fine-tune it, you know, to where you're saying exactly what you feel that people can relate to in the least amount of time and space. So,
were you a secret performer like you were a secret songwriter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did everything they tell me in the closet, right? Yeah, it was those were my days of training. And like I said, it's very important to me to train and to train not in someone's shadow or image, but to really get what you feel together. And that's the way I found I could do it and feel real good about doing it. And then when I presented it, it was what I felt, and it was I think it was together. A lot of people appreciated it, so.
Is this the first time that you've been performing in public?
Well, I did perform in different ways. I did a lot of theater work, and I sung with different groups, but mostly like college things, you know, more underground type work. It wasn't, you know, popular clubs or anything like that, but more like in theaters or college campus things. So now this is the national, my first, I guess you could say, national performing.
So you think you're going to be writing mostly songs for yourself now?
We've cut down a lot, huh? I guess we haven't really talked about it. You know, it's kind of a creative flow. You know, you let it flow. Some of the things that come out are for us, and some are, we figure, for other people. But for the most part, we've been concentrating lately on us.
Well, let's talk about it.
I think so.
Let's play another record from Love Wars. And this is Catch and Don't Look Back. Do you want to say a little bit about writing this song?
Oh, yeah. I love this song. It's so down to earth and at home for most women. And I think you can turn it around and say sometimes for men, but mostly for a woman. You know, a guy sees you and he likes you from a physical standpoint and wants to catch you for whatever his personal gratification could be. But then he, you know, has nothing else to offer, right? So it's like catch and don't look back. Something we don't want to get involved in most of the time. And this young lady is saying she's been through that, and she doesn't want to hear it, you know.
Okay, so this is Catch and Don't Look Back, written by Linda and Cecil Womack from their new album, Love Wars.
You're selling, baby, I ain't buying.
From the new Womack and Womack album Love Wars, that was Catch and Don't Look Back, written by my guests Linda and Cecil Womack. You're, as I mentioned before, both from musical families, and Cecil, I'd like to talk with you about your musical past. How old were you when you started performing with your brothers?
About four.
Really? Uh-huh. And you were singing gospel music then, right?
Yeah, we were singing as the Womack brothers.
And your father was a gospel singer?
Right, Friendly Womack. He was the leader of our group and family.
Were you religious when you were young?
Yeah, very. Still religious.
So the music was for you religiously inspired?
Oh, yes, for sure.
When did you start playing rock and roll with your brothers?
In 1961.
How did that go over in the family? Was your father disappointed that you were doing something that wasn't religious music?
Yes, he didn't really want us to do that because he knew it was kind of rough out there on that side, you know. And I think that's basically what he was afraid of, you know.
So it was more the industry than the music itself?
Right, yeah.
What kind of songs were you doing?
Well, the first song we did was Looking for Love. And basically love songs, you know, we didn't sing anything terrible. But that was the first song that we recorded.
What was happening on the charts at the time that you were playing? Do you remember?
Let me see. When we had out Looking for Love, I think the Contours had out Do You Love Me. You remember that song?
Mm-hmm.
And let me see. The Vibrations had out Peanut Butter. And see, Sam Cooke had out, I think, Chain Gang, I believe. And Jackie Wilson had out Dogging Me Around, I think. And some other stuff. James Brown had out, I think, Prisoner of Love. You know.
Did you ever want to establish a musical identity at that time outside of your family presence?
No, I always wanted to do it with the family, you know, because our father raised us like that, you know. He said, if you get married, just change your wife's name and get her right in there and make her sing right with you.
How do you feel about that statement now?
I feel good. I see, you know, it works, you know.
How do you feel about that, Linda?
Oh, yeah, it does, because you stick together. It's beautiful. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Keep it in the family.
Do you think of your music as still having a gospel base to it?
Yeah, it'll always have that, because there's no way you can get away from that, you know.
You recorded a record with your brothers that the Rolling Stones later recorded. How did you feel when they had a hit of it?
Oh, it felt good, because their version helped our record. I would say our record reached more areas. We probably wouldn't have reached that many areas if we had our record hadn't been covered by this. You know, we were able to get on country and western stations, and the record went worldwide. So our version went worldwide along with this. You know.
Yeah. So the song was "It's All Over Now." How did they hear it from your record?
Yeah, it was very. Our record was very big in England, and that's where they heard it at, and they recorded it.
When someone does a cover version of one of your records, does that make you feel good or ripped off?
Oh, it makes us feel real good, because we know that somebody out there is listening to it, and that we're reaching, different musicians. Like, that established a long-time relationship for us with the Rolling Stones. And, whenever they come over here, they look us up, and, we go out and work with them and stuff like that. So, that was really a great opening.
Well, what I'd like to do is play the Valentinos. That was the name of the group that you worked with your brothers.
Right.
Their version, and then the Rolling Stones version of It's All Over Now. Do you want to comment on the differences between the two styles of recording that song?
Well, I think that we did the song, you know, in the studio with a couple of guitars and bass and piano. And I think they used basically the same instrumentation as we were using, you know, only their version is a little more, probably a little more country, than ours, you know. But they both are good in their own ways.
Okay, let's listen to the Valentinos first, featuring my guest Cecil Womack. Then we'll hear the Stones version of It's All Over Now. Stones version of the Womack song It's All Over Now, and we heard the Valentinos, which was the name the Womacks recorded under, the Womack brothers. And my guest Cecil Womack was somewhere between 13 and 15, we've established, when that recording was made. He was featured on guitar and backup vocals. And my guests are Linda and Cecil Womack, who are now recording their own songs together under the name Womack and Womack, and their latest record, their only record together, is called Love Wars, and we'll be hearing another selection from that in just a few minutes. Do you have a process when you're writing songs together? Does one of you do music and the other lyrics?
Well, no, we just kick it around
yeah,
back and forth.
Yeah, we do it together.
Whatever comes first.
It depends. Sometimes Cecil's, you know, playing around with some lyrics, and we put the music to it, or sometimes the music comes first. It's just, you know, real free.
How do you decide who's going to sing lead?
The story of the song, you know, determines that, you know, because a lot of songs are geared towards talking directly to the lady, you know, and Linda can handle that. And then songs are geared to the lady. When, you know, most songs are geared to the lady, but I mean, from a man's point of view, so now I'll take care of that.
Why is that most songs are geared to women?
Well, because it's been an old saying that men don't buy records. So most people write songs, you know, women listen to lyrics, they listen to, you know, they're sensitive about music. Guys will, you know, you got a few guys that'll buy a record, but basically they'll buy it for their wife or something like that.
I thought it was the other way around. I thought it was supposed to be men that bought the records.
Oh, they buy them for the ladies, though.
Okay.
So first you got to win the lady's heart if you want to get the man's pocketbook.
That's been the old saying, I tell you. Time tested, at least for the writers. Mm-hmm. That's the way it goes.
I've been wondering if you if you watch a lot of movies, because it just seems to me that some of your song titles are like genre movies, like Love TKO, you know, about boxing, and Love Wars, you know, throw the gun,
oh, yeah,
the guns down on the floor.
Then
APB, which has all this like police and detective imagery.
That stuff rubs off on you.
Yeah, well, you know, we like that real. It really expresses the thought when you can get some image, you know, some kind of parable or something to go along with that people can relate to, and they can really dig in.
A lot of the way a song sounds really depends on how the album is produced now. Cecil, how has record producing changed since you've been producing records?
Well, the recording facilities.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more advanced, you know. You can do a lot more quicker, easier, you know, because you have so many tracks to work with, you know. And then it's a lot to hide behind, too, you know.
Are you excited when there's new technology or, you know, like a new kind of synthesizer, or do you ever find yourself resisting change like that?
No, I like that if it's something helpful, you know.
Yeah.
If it's something helpful, you know. But I don't fancy that we should depend on those things, because a lot of times it has a tendency to make people lazy, you know. The things they don't normally have arranged out in their head, they say, well, we'll get it in the mix, you know, we'll put some of this on it.
You know? It's like a cover-up, you know, for really writing a song sometime. We don't like to use it like that.
There's a lot of charges now that are being leveled at rock stations for playing only white music, and music has become very racially defined. Though there are some stations, and I think especially in Philadelphia, that play some of both. Though, does that affect you, or affect the way you write? I mean, would you like to have what's called a crossover hit that gets played on a variety of stations that cater largely to black and white audiences?
Well, we write for people, you know, of all nationalities and colors, because we're not really one thing, you know. We're not strictly R&B artists or pop artists. It's too bad that it has to be defined like that, but we find that people all over appreciate our music, you know, whether or not they're playing it on a particular pop station or R&B station for that matter, you know.
Well, how do you get it on the station?
Well,
what, on a pop station?
Yeah, that's...
I think that depends on the station, you know, how they feel. You know, because they have certain records they want to select and they want to play, you know.
Uh-huh.
And if they really want to play a record, you know, they could. You know, could nobody stop them?
You have how many kids between you now?
Five. Yeah.
And your youngest daughter, who's two, Micah,
she's
is in the studio with us now.
Every now and then, the little pops, right, that comes from her, not you.
What do you have to do to keep together your performing and recording career and have the family stick together at the same time?
Well, we raised them up. You know, we had good training, Cecil and I both, And they have to learn, like this one here is learning not to crackle or talk when we're doing something. And we teach them, you know. It's the only way to do it. You take them with them, you know, with you and teach them. And hopefully if they like it, they become a part. Our oldest sing on the records and whatnot. So
were your parents who were performers strict with you when you were growing up?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, they took us everywhere, you know. And that's the way you learn. They take you and, you know, you start finding out what it's about. You know, we got out on the road at early ages. So we was able to just kind of live life with it.
Would you want your children to become musicians or singers?
If they want it, you know, we don't push them. And if they want to do it, we encourage them and try to teach them the right way to do it.
Okay, well, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us and wish you the best with your new record. It's been great to meet you.
Thank you.
Oh, thanks.
And, we're going to play another selection from the record, another song that you've co-written, which is called APB.
Okay.
Let me ask you to say a little bit about writing this record, writing the song.
All Points Bulletin.
Yeah.
We heard a man crying one day, and he was walking down the street with his head hanging low, and he was saying if you ever see his best friend and his wife, that he had something for him. And I said, wow, ain't that something? And that guy's really out of it, you know. And then we started putting this song together, you know, because he was looking for him, you know. He just seemed like he had gone into an oblivion, just kept saying, if I ever find him. It seemed like that guy's got out of All Points Bulletin on them people.
Okay, well, let's hear it. APB, performed by my guests Linda and Cecil Womack, who record under the name Womack and Womack, and their new album is called Love Wars. And again, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Oh, really? It was wonderful.
And the Womacks divide their time between New Jersey and Los Angeles. And here's APB.
My time I shouldn't waste. Oh. laughing like it's some kind of joke. While my money's going up in smoke, they misuse my credit cards. Spend my money like movie stars. And the thing that made me feel so blue, they bought some mean alligator shoes.
So I got them all points.
Coming at you, child.
Womack and Womack from their new album, Love Wars. That was APB, Linda and Cecil Womack. And this is Fresh Air. You tune to WHYY FM in Philadelphia. It's 2 minutes to 4 o'clock. Coming up in a little while on Fresh Air, we'll be joined by Bartlett and Steele, the Philadelphia Inquirer investigative reporting team, whose latest series was about nuclear waste in America. And the series was called Forevermore, which is how long they think that waste is going to be with us. They'll be with us in a little while on Fresh Air to talk about their series. Every Wednesday at this time, rock critic Ken Tucker joins us for Hearing Secret Harmonies.
I'm Ken Tucker, and this is Hearing Secret Harmonies. In honor of the rich soul music tradition represented by Womack and Womack today, I'm going to start this show by playing a current example of soul music that stretches across the past 3 decades, really. There's a new album called City Slicker by a singer named Jay Blackfoot, who is a soul music veteran himself. He used to be a backup singer for Stax Records, for example. This new album has done a remarkable thing. Released on the tiny southern label called Soundtown, it has already yielded a big hit single, a ballad called Taxi, that's sitting on the black music charts alongside the new rap music and dance music hits. Here is Jay Blackfoot singing in his typically gritty, subtle manner a song called The Way of the City.
Job he could find.
That's Jay Blackfoot from a new album called City Slicker, an album that does a really good job, I think, of capturing the feeling of good old-fashioned soul music. I saw a movie last night called Against All Odds, that remake of the film noir classic Out of the Past. Now, I ain't no film critic, but it does seem to me as if this movie would appeal primarily to people who have driven that twisty-turny Beverly Hills stretch of Sunset Boulevard and would like to see what it's like to do it at 100 miles an hour. There's a great car chase scene in this movie and very little else. But in the middle of this rather misbegotten movie is a spectacular performance by Kid Creole and the Coconuts, which made me remember that I really liked the most recent Kid Creole album released a couple of months ago called Doppelganger. Kid Creole is an alias for the singer and songwriter August Darnell, one of the few rock artists around who not only has a master's degree in English, but who actually seems to know how to use it regularly. August Darnell has spent the last few Kid Creole albums spinning a very elaborate, amusing tale of Kid Creole's search for an elusive woman. And Kid Creole's journeys have taken him to many tropical islands, which are ideal settings for August Darnell's really striking mixture of Latin, tropical, funk, and rock rhythms. On the cut I'm going to play, Kid Creole has been shipwrecked and is clinging to a lifeboat in the middle of some mythical ocean or other. This is Kid Creole and the Coconuts and Lifeboat Party.
Welcome to the Lifeboat Party, child.
That was August Darnell as Kid Creole. You may think that brassy, jazzy sound reminds you of a hit from the late 70s, Cherchez la Femme by Dr. Buzzard's Savannah Band. Remember that? Well, that was August Darnell, too, in yet another incarnation. That kind of party music reminds me of another kind of sort of all-American stuff made by the Leroy brothers on a new album called Forget About the Danger, Think of the Fun. The Leroys are from Fort Worth, Texas. Actually, none of them are brothers, and only two of them are named Leroy. And they released their own album last year called Check This Action that avoided all the cliches of rockabilly and country rock music while embodying the wild spirit of those genres nonetheless. This new album is the group's debut on a major label, Columbia, but they've managed to avoid being slicked down by a big company or turned into the kind of novelty act that some of their funny, loopy songs might have suggested that they would become. What I like about the cut I'm going to play, Dance With Me Tonight, is the deep, echoey vocals. It's a kind of sonic blast from the past that the Leroy brothers have managed to bring up to date, as well as the really strong, throbbing guitar sound that seems as if it might have reverberated up from the 50s. These are the Leroy brothers and Dance With Me Tonight.
Whip, 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 whip a little loving on me. Just a little bit of kissing and a hugging on me. Baby, be good. You get the loving that a good girl should. Well, you don't need no reason, girl, to get some squeezing. Come on, baby, dance with me. Slip, slip, slip your loving arms around me. Make me know that you are glad you found me. Baby, you're fine. And someday I'm